it's your girl, Carla Renata, for episode 31 of Black Tomatoes. We got Monsters. We got Lady Gaga. We got Tiffany Haddish. And most of all, we got a little Scott Mantz. Stay tuned. That fantabulous voice that you hear in the background is the moment when Lady Gaga hits the stage with Bradley Cooper in the new fall hit, A Star Is Born. Welcome to episode 31 of Black Tomatoes. I am your girl, the curvy film critic, Carla Renata, and we are going to talk about Monsters and Men. We're going to talk about Night School with Tiffany Haddish. We're going to talk about a little... Nightmare on Elm Street. What's that one?
Night of the Living Dead.
Night of the Living Dead. And we're going to talk about a little old man and a gun and a whole bunch of other things. But before we get to that, I want to check in with my co-host, who is...
Scott Menzel. How are you, my dear?
Clearly, I can't think straight. Yeah. And next to him...
Too much Scotts.
Okay, so y'all, I got two Scotts in here with me today, and it's a little toasty roasty up in the studio, so I'm not thinking very clearly, but Scott Mantz and Scott Menzel run the LA Online Film Critics Association. They were kind and generous enough to make me a member of that organization, which is almost a year old?
It's about two years now.
So, yeah, so Scott is here to join us. He's also a film critic, and he has his own show over at Collider called Movie Talk. Welcome, Scott, man.
Thank you so much, Kirby Film Critic. It's so great to be here with you and with the other Scott M.
Oh, and I forgot, you're also an Emmy-nominated film critic, so there's that.
Well, you know... There's all that stuff.
Yeah, but that's kind of fantabulous.
So that's cool. I had to bring that up.
So let's start talking about A Star Is Born. Let me just say, I liked Lady Gaga, but I'm like hardcore diehard fan of hers now after A Star Is Born, because I thought she absolutely killed it. But I think I was more impressed with Bradley Cooper in the film because I didn't know that he could sing. I didn't know that he had music chops in terms of songwriting. He took on a lot of responsibility in this film. He's directing, he's producing, he's acting, he's co-writing songs with Lady Gaga, he's performing. That's a lot for somebody to take on for their first film directing, I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
I mean, Barbara Streisand did it when she did A Star Is Born.
76.
But that's Barbara Streisand. You know what I'm saying? That's bad. So that's a whole other thing going on. Mm-hmm. But I'd be interested to know what you guys thought about it.
Can I go with this? So this is the fourth time officially that The Star Is Born has been done.
Yes. Absolutely.
There was 1937, 1954, and 1976, the one you mentioned with Barbara Streisand. So this is the fourth time this movie is being done.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've seen any one of the other versions, any one of them, you know the story.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went in and I watched this fourth version of A Star Is Born, the fourth time this story is being told.
I can tell where this is going already.
I thought, okay, it's A Star Is Born. It hits the plot points. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, it does it in a different way than the other films. I thought Bradley Cooper directed the hell out of this movie. You're right. He wears a ton of hats. And I must say, in terms of like his filmmaking prowess in front of and behind the camera, he was a revelation. I think he's done amazing work since like he's the guy from The Hangover. And he's doing American Sniper. And he's directing A Star Is Born. He co-wrote it. He acted. He did Key Grip. He did Craft Services. I mean, he did everything on A Star Is Born.
He was a Key Grip and did Craft Services. God, man.
And he voiced Rocket when he was doing the movie, too.
Lady Gaga's vocals. Yeah. That's really Bradley Cooper's vocals. Forget Lady Gaga. But, I mean, the point that I'm trying to make is, like everything about this film, it's a very, very good movie, and it's going to be a massive hit movie. Scott, I know you feel this way. You said that that Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga are the Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone of this year. And elsewhere, I said this is the La La Land of 2018. But La La Land was a very different kind of movie. It was a much more challenging and ambitious film than a lot of people give it credit for. Where this film. It's A Star Is Born, and for the first hour, especially of the movie, I felt like Bradley Cooper, you know, as he co-wrote the screenplay, his efforts to hit those plot points made the movie feel a little bit contrived.
Hmm.
because I did feel that there was a bit of a strain to hit those points, even though it's a more contemporary story than the other ones are. I mean, the 76 version, they were all contemporary for their day, and this one is. And Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, phenomenal chemistry, great music. As a Cooper's performance is phenomenal. I think that his directing will overshadow his performance. Not a bad problem. But in the end, it is a movie that has been done three other times. It's a very good movie, but that's it.
Okay.
All right. My take.
He's like, and then there's that.
And then, no, I mean, Mance is, he makes a very good point. I mean, this is not nothing new. It is something that we've seen before. But for me, I think this is an emotional roller coaster of a film. And having dealt with someone with addiction, having my wife having dealt with someone with addiction, that part of the story was what really spoke to me. And the fact that addiction does not stop your life. It does not stop your life at all. It keeps going. Oh, okay. And I just thought that that really added a lot to this movie. We know Lady Gaga can sing. I want to first and foremost say that. Okay.
Yeah. But, not a revelation.
I know. Yeah. Right. So I mean, we know that she pretty much plays a portion of herself, I think, in the beginning of the movie, mm-hmm. because, you know, she takes off her makeup. She's like, oh, I was never pretty enough to do this, blah, 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 blah. You know, the same way I feel like her career is kind of unfolded. She came out and she was kind of doing like the Madonna type thing where she was in crazy costumes and whatnot. And then she did the, you know, the Tony Bennett thing where she kind of, you know, took off everything, just came into the world regular. And that's what I see in this performance. She's just being who she is. But she is so incredibly emotional in this performance, and her chemistry with Bradley Cooper is just incredible as well. Like you said, I mean, Bradley Cooper, I've never really taken the guy too seriously, I'll be honest. And this is the first time that I've watched a movie with him, and I'm kind of like, wow, he's the real deal. You know, I know, you know, like yourself and my wife. Oh, he's handsome. He's handsome. And I get
that. No, he's not handsome. He's fine. Yeah, okay. Yeah. There's a difference in being handsome and fine. Yeah. He's fine.
Yeah. But I mean, all the things that he's taken on in this movie, and I love the Sam Elliott kind of impression that he does throughout this entire movie.
And he's fine too.
Yes. And he's good. So I really did enjoy this. And I do think it's so far one of the best things I've seen this year.
Okay, so let me just address a few things that y'all said that I have to jump on the bandwagon with. So, yeah, this is the fourth version of it. Mm-hmm. I saw all four of them. Have you seen all four of them?
I saw all four.
Okay, so I saw all four of them. This one was interesting to me because usually the other three focus on the woman's point of view in that story. This one focused more on his point of view in the story, mm-hmm. and I kind of appreciated that because to me that made it fresh and that made it not like the other three. It gave it a different perspective to look at in that respect for me. I think that y'all are right when you say his directing is probably going to foreshadow his acting in the film, which is exactly right because his directing was kind of off the charts.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I'm kind of glad he's going to get that shine. The other point I wanted to make was with Lady Gaga. I told her this when we saw her in Toronto. I told her that...
Name dropper.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I dropped that name. Bam!
And she hugged us both, too.
And she hugged us both, and yeah. I talked to her. Like, she was right up in my ear. Yeah, I said that.
Yeah.
So, what I want to say about her is that there are very few people in the music industry that can cross genres with their music and their ability to do so effortlessly and with perfection. Aretha Franklin was one of them, and so is Lady Gaga. So, I appreciate the fact that when she sings La Vie en Rose in this film, she's freaking killing. That's not, as someone who sings, I can tell you right now, that song is not easy to sing by any stretch of the imagination. That song that we played a clip of at the beginning of the show, that song is not hard to sing. It sounds easy because she's holding one note and kind of floating in and out.
I wouldn't say it was easy.
But let me tell you, the types of songs that Stephanie sings are really, really difficult songs to vocalize with. So I think that she should be given a little bit more credit in that regard. Because I know firsthand that what she does really well is not easy. She does it effortlessly and she makes it look like it's the bomb diggity, but it's kind of not.
All right, here's the thing. So Lady
I mean,
Gaga,
it is the bomb diggity, but it's hard.
Lady Gaga, okay. I feel like, you know, since, you know, the last couple weeks, and the movie opens on October 5th officially.
Yes.
But, you know, it's been making the rounds at the, mm-hmm. it was at Venice, it was at Toronto. They've been screening it.
Like crazy.
They had the LA premiere last week. Mm-hmm. And everyone is screaming, like, this is the Oscar frontrunner for Best Picture, and this is like.
It's too early for that, I think.
Well, I see. Now, it's not that I think it's too early for that, because in the last, like, 17 years or so, 15 out of the top, out of the last 17 years, the Oscar for Best Picture went to movies that screened at the fall film festivals. The exceptions were Million Dollar Baby in 2004 and No Country for Old Men in 2007.
Okay.
Otherwise, they all screened at, like, Venice, Telluride, or Toronto, or maybe all three of them. So, okay, so you have A Star is Born, which has been screening like crazy, and I do think it is a very entertaining movie. It's very, very well made.
Mm-hmm.
I think the singing is great. The chemistry is great. But is it really like an Oscar frontrunner? And to that, I say no, because it has been done three other times, or four if you count What Price Hollywood, which is really A Star is Born.
I think it could be a Best Picture contender. You don't?
I think it'll be a Best – it'll get nominated. Mm-hmm. It'll get nominated. But will it win? I mean, is it a movie like Argo or 12 Years a Slave or?
But does it have to be an Argo or 12 Years a Slave to be an Oscar winner or considered something that's going to win an Oscar? You know what I mean?
If it resonates with you, here's the problem I have.
Go for it, man.
It didn't take chances. In the end, it did not rock my world. It was entertaining. I had fun with it. But it's not a movie like Roma is a film that takes chances. First Man is I know you didn't like it as much as I did. First Man is a film, and you didn't like it either as much as I did. But that is a film that takes chances. And maybe those chances don't work for everybody, and I certainly get that. But, you know, I just didn't think that A Star is Born in the end. Like, there was nothing different about it. Nothing surprised me. I mean, again, it's very, 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 very good. But that's it.
Okay.
I think, you know, you make a very good point here as well. But I think, Carla, when you chimed in, it made an even better point. This year, I think, because now they eliminated the popular film category because everyone hated it.
Right.
You know, like, we're having all these conversations about, like, these movies. You know, there's talk about Black Panther. There's talk about Star is Born. Another movie that I'm surprised is getting a lot of talk, and I enjoyed the hell out of it, but I'm surprised it's getting Best Picture talk, is Green Book.
I didn't see it. That's another film. Yeah.
But it's a change of pace. And these three films are great examples of ones that we never really would expect for Best Picture.
Interesting.
And they may get nominated this year.
I think that A Star is Born, it may not sweep wins at the Oscars, but it will sweep wins at the Golden Globes.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Because you got the musical
and soundtrack, for sure. Like, I feel bad for anyone who's going up against this movie for song, because it's dead in the water.
But even having said that about the Golden Globes, because, you know, the Golden Globes, they have drama and they have musical or comedy.
Yes,
and
they
like
do.
In, you know, for 2016, La La Land won all seven Golden Globes that it was nominated for. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that might get in the way of that is Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes. Queen, just like Gaga, Queen is one of my all-time favorites, and I've actually worked for them and sung their music too. In Vegas.
Name dropper again.
Yes, I am. Yes, too. Boom. That's yes, the, I will, yes,
this
I will
the
do
show.
That.
What
yes.
Carla has done in the industry.
I love it. This
you
is
know
great.
What? Don't hate. Don't hate. Congratulate. Don't be mad. Don't be mad.
You know I love it.
Don't be mad.
Carla, you know I love it.
Don't be mad. Yes, I will drop it because ain't nobody else going to do it for me.
Yep,
how about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Both of y'all.
You know I love you. Don't worry about it.
But do you think that it is like, not? I mean, listen, I think we can all agree that it's going to get nominated for picture, probably director.
Lady Gaga's
actress.
She's a shoo-in.
Actor. But will, like, what do you think his chances are? Like that, like, oh my God, like, this is it. The race is over. This is the one.
No, I think what's going to happen is they're going to get a lot of nominations, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see which one of the nominations rises to the top in terms of a win. Mm-hmm. But it is going to get recognized a lot, I think, across all categories.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what I feel about that. All right, now that we had a big old fight over A Star is Born.
Well, wait a minute. You didn't like First Man?
Okay. We ain't talking about First Man today.
No.
But anywho. So on to the next film with my girl Tiffany Haddish. Now, let me just say.
Okay, here we go.
I love Tiffany Haddish. That's my girl. I think she's hella funny. You know, she blew everybody out of the water with Girls Trip last year. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, she's been on like a roller coaster ride of epic proportions, winning the Emmy for guest hosting at Saturday Night Live. Like, she's really having a moment. But I'll say this about Night School. When I went into it, I said this to my god sister when we were walking in. When I went to see Night School, because it's Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish, and because both of them comedically are so crazy out of the box, I was expecting to have my buns laughing off from the moment I sat down to the time I left. And what happened was, as I laughed my buns off probably from like a quarter of the film in to kind of halfway through, and then that was kind of it. And I felt like it was one of those films that was in a comedic sensibility sort of way, was trying to make a statement about learning disabilities, and is wonderfully acceptable. As wonderful as that message is, and as much as that message needs to be put out there, that some people are not just clinically dumb, they have a learning disability that prevents them from learning like other people, as important as I think that message is, I don't necessarily know if Night School was the place to have it be beat over your head with. If you're going to have somebody like Tiffany and Kevin in a movie with that much comedic talent, then I think, you know, make use of that comedic talent to the full of its extent and not waste it trying to make a message. That's what I feel about Night School.
All right, Scott, you go.
Okay.
Because you got something to say. I enjoyed
it for what it was. I agree with you. I think it's completely forgettable. It's nothing new whatsoever. And part of it almost felt like The Breakfast Club, like a rip off of The Breakfast Club at a point. To me, the weakest part of this entire movie was Kevin Hart. I felt like the cast, the Night School cast, had great chemistry. They were fun. There needed to be more character development between them. But I thought they were really fun to watch, and Tiffany Haddish was great. But Kevin Hart is just doing his Kevin Hart thing. He's just screaming, he's just yelling, and after a while it just kind of got really old. And it's so formulaic. By the time it kind of wraps up, you're like, this is way too perfect. Like, there's no reason for this to wrap up as perfectly as it does. But with that being said, it's fine. I didn't hate it. I didn't like it. I didn't love it. I thought it was a great Netflix movie.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I had a lot of fun, but you know, I was walking in expecting one thing and got something else.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm tending to side more with you, Carl, on this. Having said that, you are being way too kind on this movie, and here's why. Kevin Hart, I actually think he's really funny. I like Kevin Hart. Mm-hmm. You're right. Tiffany Haddish, what a freaking year. She just like went from 0 to 11, you know, and she deserves it because she is talented. She is very, very funny. Put the two of them together, and this is the best that you can do.
It's weird.
Now, why is that? Because it's not an R-rated movie. It's a PG-13 movie. Strike one. Strike two, you're watching the opening the opening credits, and the first thing you see when it's written by, it's credited to 6 screenwriters. It's credited.
I peeped that. Yeah. I did peep that.
You went,
I was like,
not a good sign. Never a good sign. when you got 6 credited screenwriters. One of them was John Hamburg, who directed I Love You Man and Along Came Polly. But Kevin Hart is also a credited screenwriter. And you put the two of them together, and it has its moments, but they were fleeting. They weren't enough. I felt like the movie did get better when you get to the Night School. You got Rob Riggle and you got Romany Malka. He was hilarious.
Oh my god, was giving me life.
But it just, the laughs came few and far between. I felt like the movie just dried. It was a lazy, broad comedy, and yeah, you're right, it did wrap up all too neatly.
Yes.
But I also expected that because it is a lazy, broad comedy. You know, this is not Inception, okay?
I just hate when
you come. Let's just acknowledge that you're gonna compare Night School to Inception.
I'm not comparing Night School to Inception,
dude. I cannot even with you right now.
I mean, like, I gave it like a C. I mean, it's it's okay. You're right. It's a Netflix movie. And even if it is on Netflix, I'm sure there's better things to watch.
Okay. So as an addendum to what we've all said, I did want to add the fact that it is produced by Will Packer, who also produced Girls Trip.
Yes.
And I think probably what happened was they saw what happened with Girls Trip and they were in such a hurry to get some more content out there with Tiffany that maybe not enough attention was paid to the fine details of this film.
Oh,
and that's why it probably
saying.
Turned out the way that it did.
Sure. I think it's a lot of what Mann said, though, about the script. I think when there's a lot of points where you watch this film and you feel like it can go someplace, and what happens is it just kind of doesn't go for it. It goes for the cheap, easy joke. It's so generic. And that's because, like, there wasn't enough focus on the script.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with y'all. I'm saying that the fact that there wasn't enough, I don't know how much time they spend on the script. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But, but I'm just saying, I feel like because it was rushed to get out, the content was rushed to get out, I think enough time wasn't paid to the premise, enough time wasn't paid to the script, enough time wasn't paid to the jokes. I don't know how much input Tiffany and Kevin had in that regard. Like, I don't know. So I feel like as a result of all of that, it kind of came up the way that it did.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we can move on from that because we didn't talk about that. So the next one up is Monsters and Men. And I know you saw the Sundance too,
right? did, but I'm actually going to step out on this conversation because I don't remember enough of it.
Well, that's not a good sign.
I want to be fair.
Yeah,
I would watch it again.
I too saw it at Sundance, and I certainly remember a lot about it because it was definitely one of the standouts that I did see. But you go first.
Okay, so what I will say about this film is that it felt like one of those. First of all, it stars John David Washington, who's Denzel's son, which I feel bad for him because every time somebody mentions his name, that's what they're going to say now, Denzel's son.
Fun, yeah.
But he's a really gifted actor in his own right, so we need to not do that. And after this, I'll never do it again. So there's that. He's joined by Anthony Ramos, who's also in A Star is Born and was in Hamilton on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And Kelvin Harrison Jr. is in it, who does an exemplary job in that film. Mm-hmm. The film basically takes a lot of different headlines that we've seen across the last few years regarding black men being killed and shot that are unarmed. It's taken a lot of those premises and thrown them into one film under the auspices of when you're dealing with a police officer, a man in the blue. Does he react the way he's expected to react or the way he wants to react in any given situation? And there's a huge difference. And between these three characters, we see one is a police officer who's getting pulled over, but his partner, who is a white female, is not. She is, but not to the extent that he is. We see, and he's conflicted about his role in all of that when it goes down, especially in regards to one of his fellow police officers. We have Anthony's character, who's an ex-felon, who's trying to get a job, trying to do what's right. He's the one that films what goes down when somebody gets shot. And he has to make that decision of whether to do what's right or whether to do what's expected at the expense of how it's going to affect his family and his ability to make his livelihood in life. And then we have the other character by Kelvin, who's expected by his family to go to college. Like, everybody in his family is excited about the fact that he's going to be one of the first people in the family to go and get a college education, to get a sports scholarship. Like,
yeah,
they're happy about that.
Yep.
They're, like, really excited about that, but he's not as excited about it as they are. And he's feeling like there's got to be more to life than this. I'm feeling like, you know, I need to do something more. He decides he wants to go to a rally and figures out that his heart is more in being an activist than it is going to college on a scholarship. So you see all three of these men from very different backgrounds, very different ideologies, trying to decide if they're going to do what is right or if they're going to do what is expected. I sat down and I talked to John David and Anthony exactly about that, and I just want to play a little excerpt before we talk to you, Scott.
In Toronto, you talked about the lasagna of emotions that your character
lasagna of emotions.
Now, what would you consider the lasagna of emotions that Dennis goes through and Manny goes through in Monsters and Men?
He's caught between doing the right thing, but what does that mean for his family, for the community, you know, for his country? You know, he's a man that has to wear different hats. He has a son. You know, he has to consider, you know, like how he's raising him and the young men that he sees every day patrolling, that he's protecting. He also is thinking about his son. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So there's so many, you know, emotions about that and what is right from wrong and what does that mean? Right for his family, wrong for the community, right for the community, putting his family in danger. You know, mm-hmm. what's first?
Mm-hmm.
Manny. What is selfish and what isn't? Mm-hmm. You know? And I think we're faced with these issues all the time, and I'm grateful to be able to play a character with so many layers, and you just, I mean, the guy is just going through so much the whole time, and but he really at the core of it, he wants to do the right thing, and it's just that simple question of what is the right thing, and what am I, how far am I willing to go to do the right thing?
I mean, I think that's the common theme, though, like the through line between all three characters. You know, what does the right thing mean when you have to consider, you know, other people, your family, really, you know? So,
okay, how do you think that affects a family having a single mother having to deal with that after the fact?
Even more of a reason why we have to support one another, and we have to find ways to not allow the anger that comes from these situations to get the best of us, where we can't communicate in a logical way and in a clear way to one another, to give our best shot at giving the most sound perspective to someone who may not understand where we're coming from, because there's two sides to every story, and it's just, but it's like, you know, I wrote this song called Common Ground, and it's like, I'm calling you out because I'm watching what you do. It's like you can call it what you want, but I'm watching what you do, and I'm calling you out, and I'm reaching out to make our way back to common ground. Let's make our way back to common ground. It's all about the common ground, and even if it's shaking, we have to find a way to find the common ground, even if the floor is doing this, you know?
I appreciate you. Thank you both. Thank guys. You. I appreciate you appreciate so much.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
So much, you know, the guy off the side, like, he's
yeah,
like
he was
this.
On the yeah. side, going, wrap it up, wrap it up.
I hate that all the time, all the time.
It's all good,
but that's our curse.
Yes.
But what are your thoughts about this, man?
Okay, well, I did. You said something very, very interesting that we're seeing this common theme now about a cop, you know, a white cop who shoots a black man,
mm-hmm.
and the consequences of it. Mm-hmm. It was a subplot of another film at Sundance, Blindspotting, which mm-hmm. was the opening night film, and it's also a part in The Hate U Give.
Yes.
So what's interesting is of those three films, I feel like Monsters and Men does the best job with dealing with the moral dilemma. The moral dilemma, not just with one person, but with three people from three different walks of life. You know, one of them is a cop, the cop played by John David Washington. But I like that different point of view. I like that perspective. What I also really appreciated about this movie, written and directed by Rinaldo Marcus Green.
Yes, I spoke with him as well.
Did they do that too with him?
Well, actually, his was over the phone, so his is a little bit longer. They can find that interview at curvyfilmcritic.com.
Okay. But you know what, Carla, I just felt like the different point of view aspect of it, it was very engaging and engrossing. It held my attention.
Mm.
I also liked that the movie didn't end the way I thought it was going to end, because it takes place in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of New York, which is where Do the Right Thing took place.
Absolutely.
And that's the first thing I thought about when things started to go down in this movie, and I thought that it was going to go there. But listen, we all know Do the Right Thing really built to a massive explosive crescendo of a film. This movie does not do that. It's sort of like throws it back to you to draw your own conclusions and make up your own minds.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at the time at Sundance, I think we were even talking about this, Scott, that we didn't really like the way it ended. But then the more I thought about it, the fact that it does leave it open like that is a good trait of the movie, that it doesn't like, you know, tie it up in a bow, whether it's a good or bad bow or a nice or complex bow. It throws it back to the audience to draw your own conclusions.
That's a good point, too. That's a good point, too, because with a film like this, you can't tie it in a nice bow and go, here you go. Here's a nice little ending. You can't do that with this type of film. It doesn't lend itself to that type of ending. And to do anything other than that would be a little ingenuous, I think.
But also, the other thing about this movie is, you know, you're dealing with three different people who are trying to figure, what do I do about this? What I seen? What what I've seen, what I have on my phone, you know, because one guy shot up with his phone, you think it would be obvious, but there are consequences to doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the movie feels like a sort of rip from the headlines in some ways because of the remember when the cops choked that guy Eric Garner?
Mm-hmm.
That was 2014.
Yep, and then there was the Freddie Gray situation where somebody filmed that, and that person got thrown into jail for nothing. Got thrown into. I think they're still in jail right now, actually, just because they did nothing other than take their phone out and film it. So yeah.
Well, I think the writing in this movie is terrific. The performances are terrific. It is a challenging and absorbing movie, and it's one that absolutely should be seen.
Cool. All right, moving on to The Old Man and the Gun. You know, I got plenty to say about this because
is it good?
Yes, of course.
All right.
The Old Man and the Gun. I love me some Robert Redford. I'm a diehard Robert Redford fan. Yeah. Other than the fact that he's fine, I just think he's like class. He's just that classic movie star. Like, I don't know what you call it. But when he steps in front of a lens on a set and the lens captures his image, it comes back to us. And it's, I don't even know what that's called or how you explain it. But whatever that is, he's got it. And he's got it. Oh, my God. Him and Sissy Spacek. Mm-hmm. The scenes with the two of them in this film are just like legendary gold. You can't manufacture chemistry. And you certainly can't manufacture a relationship like the one that they have in this film. It's a true story based on this guy who in his 80s decides that he wants to go robbing people. Like, who does that? And then I remembered there's this older African-American woman named Doris Payne. Do you remember her? The jewel thief? Let me enlighten y'all. Oh, I know something y'all don't know.
We want to know.
Holla. Okay. So there's this woman named Doris Payne, African-American woman, gorgeous, comes from a very affluent family that for some reason just has this penchant to want to snatch jewels from various stores. And I mean, she goes into places like Tiffany's, and because she looks the way that she does, nobody questions her. And that doll walks out with like millions of dollars of jewelry all the time. She's serving time again. And like the character in The Old Man and the Gun, she's been in and out of jail, in and out of jail, in and out of jail. And when I spoke with Tika Sumter about it, who's also in this film, I was like, what do you think makes somebody do that? And she said, I think it's because they just like it. Like, they get a high off of it or something. But I enjoyed the film mostly because I love watching films that are based on true stories. Those always give me a little kick. I love watching Spacek and Redford. I loved watching Tika do something that was kind of out of the box for her. Casey Affleck, you know, being Casey Affleck. And I just, it was a very cute film, but it made me sad because I'm like, oh, really? Is this really going to be the last time I see Robert Redford in a movie? I don't want it to be, but I get it. He's in the last chapter of his life. He wants to enjoy the little bit of life that he may have left at this point. And so as one of his fans and one of the moviegoers who have enjoyed him over decades, I have to respect that decision in his life and his career, but I will miss him.
Scott.
I think David Lowery is a director who just keeps impressing. I mean, Ain't Them Body Saints, A Ghost Story, Pete's Dragon. I really enjoyed every one of those films. And I think I told you going into this movie at Telluride, I was actually more excited about it than him and our friend Mara and my wife. And I said, it's going to be good. Trust me on this one. And sure enough, it is. You know, Robert Redford, like you said, he just oozes chemistry. I mean, that guy is charismatic as hell. You know, Ashley agrees with you. He's fine, you know. There you go. And I just really, really love the chemistry between him and Sissy Spacek. Just this movie felt like it was shot in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I also love that about it. It was shot in film. It had this very authentic look to it. Had the guy, you know, the friends weren't as well developed as those two characters, but I just love the chemistry between them. And it just looked like they were having fun. I love the fact that this character never has to pull a gun on anyone, and he just uses his charm to kind of like get what he wants. And if this is the last Robert Redford movie, I feel like he goes out with a bang, because I just feel
no
like
pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended, because it just it, in a weird way, it encompasses a lot of his film and his career and just shows, like, it's not a flashy performance, not a showy performance, but it just captures Robert Redford and why we love him.
Oh, and I forgot one other thing. I love the fact that there was this one moment where Robert Redford is in the hospital and Casey Affleck does this throwback to The Sting where he goes like this.
Oh, yes.
I was like, yes, only I would catch something like that because I'm like a diehard Robert Redford fan. But
The Sting is the only acting performance that Redford was nominated for. He won Best Director for Ordinary People in 1980 and the movie won Best Picture, but he was only nominated for an actor one other time, and I'll bet you he will get nominated for this because it is his last performance at 82. And is he worthy of getting nominated for the film? Yes. Is he going to get nominated as a career topper? Probably. But here's the thing. Scott, I agree with everything you said, and both of you, actually. I did go into this movie. I remember... feeling like, oh, you know, it's going to be like, it looked a little slight to me. It looked kind of like a lightweight movie. It didn't grab me, you know, nothing about it really grabbed me. But everything about the film made it a superb, fantastic, irresistibly charming and poignant, unexpectedly poignant movie. The moments between Robert Redford and Sissy Spacek, the dialogue, you know, the moments between them are great because the chemistry is great. But David Lowery, who wrote the screenplay in addition to directing the movie, the writing is great. This is a great screenplay. The other thing you mentioned about Robert Redford, about his acting, this movie plays to his strengths. He doesn't stretch. He does what he does really, really, really well. And you talk about how he would rob a bank and he wouldn't use a gun because he would smile. And like everybody would complain to the cops, you know, give the report to Casey Affleck and say, yeah, he was smiling.
Yeah.
He was smiling. And, you know, the end of the film, no spoilers, but when you get to the end of the movie, knowing what you now know, that this is allegedly his last acting performance, although he did say at Telluride, never say never.
Yes.
But knowing what we now know about it, watching the end of the film, it felt like a send-off. It felt like a reel of sorts to sort of like, you know, have him go out, you know, on a very, very high note, on an unexpectedly poignant and profound emotional moment. I love this movie, you know, from the old man and the gun to the old manse and the gun. I really love this movie. It just is I thought Casey Affleck was great.
I liked him too.
I did. I like the way he respects Redford, you know, he's
there's
like...
There's a great scene in the bathroom.
Oh, that's a good scene.
That was a good scene.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
But him, I could take him a little.
I also want to point out that Robert Redford wanted David Lowery so badly to do this movie. He knew about it for a very long time. I remember interviewing Redford at the Peach Dragon Junket, and he's saying that he did that movie just so we can get him to do this movie.
Oh, he did Peach Dragon just so we can get him to do.
Yeah, I read that.
That is awesome.
I read that somewhere too. Yeah,
that is very awesome. But yeah, I mean, Old Man and the Gun. It's a real. It does feel like a throwback to the 70s in some ways. It really stays with you.
It's a simple movie.
It is a simple movie, but it's done so exceptionally well. Everything about it is great. The writing, the acting, the pace, the directing of it. You know, the running time is right on the money. Mm-hmm. It's about 145 or so. Mm-hmm. Terrific film.
Cool. So we got a few minutes left. And in those few minutes, I want to acknowledge the fact that... I said another horror movie was celebrating an anniversary this week, and I'm not going to say what name it is because I don't want to mess it up again. But actually, the film that is celebrating the anniversary is Night of the Living Dead, and it's celebrating 50 years. 50 years. So we want to acknowledge Night of the Living Dead, 50 years old. Bless you. I won't be seeing you, even though it's 50 years, because I don't like horror movies, so there's that. and then I wanted to talk about, we also have a streaming pick of the week. That usually Scott and I, Scott Menzel and I usually pick. But because you're our guest, I let you pick it.
Oh.
So you said that your pick this week was the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War is a PBS flick. And if our producer could run the clip whilst Mance is talking about it, that would be cool. Just run it over him talking.
Okay, now, the Vietnam War, it's a 10-part series. It was on PBS. It's now streaming on Netflix, which is how I saw it. It's a film directed by Ken Burns. Ken Burns, the master documentarian who directed epic documentary multi-part series on the Civil War and also on World War II. And this is a magnificent It is a masterpiece 10-part series that covers the Vietnam War from the touching on what the French occupation of Vietnam all the way up until the fall of Saigon in 1975 and beyond, the consequences of it. But, this is so fascinating, the perspective. It is the final word on Vietnam. It is a must-see if you have even the slightest interest, not just in Vietnam, but of the 60s. And you mentioned how Night of the Living Dead celebrates its 50th anniversary. There were a lot of allegories between Night of the Living Dead and Vietnam and the Civil Rights era. And Night of the Living Dead celebrating its 50th anniversary, it was the year that saw the deaths of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy. You had Vietnam, civil rights riots going on all over the country and across the world.
Absolutely.
And it is also the 50th anniversary of not only the Beatles' White Album, it is also...
How did I know you were going to slip that in there?
1968 is the 50th anniversary of this guy.
Oh! So, look at you.
There you go.
All right.
A little shameless plug.
It's all good. It's all good. Well, Mads, we finally got you in here.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you were happy. I'm so glad you were...
He's always happy.
He's always happy. Child, he makes me exhausted. He's so happy. But I'm so glad that you were finally able to come in here and join us.
No, you guys are my friends. I love and adore you both. And it's so great to talk movies with you on and off camera.
Yes,
absolutely. That was pure comedy.
We spent way too much time together, if that wasn't clear.
That was a lot going on. Yeah. So, just want to say thank you again.
Thank you.
Next week, we'll be talking about your favorite movie, First Man, Beautiful Boy, The Oath, and Goosebumps to Haunted Halloween. And I have a special surprise for you, my friend.
Oh, yeah?
No Venom? Yes. You guys aren't doing Venom?
I'll do Venom. We'll throw it in there.
Oh, we'll throw Venom in. Our producer's like, y'all not doing Venom? You got to do Venom.
We'll throw it in there.
We'll throw it in there.
Pretty anticipated. Sorry.
You know what? In the end, it's clickbait. Everyone wants to know how bad Venom is.
All right. No worries. So until the next time, like I said, we're going to talk about First Man, Beautiful Boy, The Oath, Goosebumps 200, Halloween, and Venom for Annie. I am your girl, Carla Renata, and your host for episode 31 of Black Tomatoes here at Black Hollywood Live. You can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. You can also find my interview with Tika Sumter for The Old Man and the Gun there. And you can find another interview with Ronaldo Marcus Green from Monsters and Men there as well. And where can we find you two young gentlemen?
You can find me at weliveentertainment.com, where you can find my written reviews and my interviews. I am at all social media at The Other Scott M. Thanks to this man right here, and Mance, take it away.
Okay, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Movie Mance, and you can watch my movie review show on Collider video every Friday morning. And both of you have been on this show, my show, and you will be on again. I can't wait.
Yep. Oh, yay! Hercules. All right, well, until the next time, love, peace, and hair grease, y'all. We'll see you next week, 5 o'clock. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.